Game On on 2FM. With Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green for setting the scene for our farewell to Donegal, although we do have him for a couple more days yet. It's Monday, the 24th of May, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, we'll have a look back at the Premier League season with Tony O'Donoghue and Stephen Kelly, and Tony will also have news on Stephen Kenny's Irish squad.
This is an influx of players into the squad that Ireland will benefit over the next couple of years. Some people might feel that's too much too soon, but there is a bigger picture, and we need that talent to come through, and we need that influx into the international team over a period of time, and you know, there's no doubt that we will reap the benefits of that.
In hurling, Niall Moran reviews the on-field action, while off the field, Damien Lawler has the latest on this.
It was very unusual for us to hear the two of our players were nominated as close contacts. You know, everything that we do, all of the protocols, all of the COVID-related stuff is so that if there is a case, that you'd be deemed as a casual contact rather than a close contact. So when someone nominated one of our players as a close contact, you know, there was a good bit of anger there and a bit of frustration as well.
In Gaelic football, we'll have Jason Sherlock on the Dublin-Kerry draw and more. Plus, we've our weekend sporting highlights as Harrington and Mickelson roll back the years.
Biggest moment of a legendary career. Phil defeats Father Time.
Game On on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. Phil Mickelson certainly defeated Father Time, and it was brilliant to watch last night. Donners, you finally got your gig. Songs, musics. The only problem is, it is 6 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, it's a different type. A different 6 o'clock than I'm used to. Yeah, I'm obviously delighted, Ruby and Marie. Of course I'm going to miss you, but I'd say you're quite glad to be free of the babysitting duties for a little while to pass it over to Dearne and Carol. So,
Say now, Donners, I never held your hand, but I'm saying you may thank Marie.
Absolutely.
So for anyone who missed the news, if you were living under a rock today, Donica O'Callaghan has got the big gig. He's moving to The Breakfast Show with Carol and Dearne starting next Monday. So tune in, everybody, and you'll get a flavour of Donica's personality.
Absolutely. It's so funny, though. Jenny held the kids back earlier on, Marie and Ruby, to leave them listen to the announcement because we didn't tell them, just thought it was the best thing to do. So they were actually more worried about being marked out of school. They were like, Mom, we seriously need to get in here. We're going to get marked out. And we didn't get to tell Jake till he got back from school. And the first thing he's there, did Dad get fired from Game On, did he?
So, betcha Jake would love you to be staying on Game On.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's convinced I got fired. So he gave me the boot in his world. But yeah, look, I'm incredibly appreciative of the opportunity. I've loved it. I've loved Game On, and hopefully I can bring what I've learned and to breakfast and enjoy it.
Yeah, well, it'll be good trio. On to another Clare woman, Donica. That's where I'm looking at it.
There you go. That's exactly it. Yeah. Honestly,
younger, cooler version as well.
You'll have to have like a handover process. You know what I mean?
I thought you'd gotten out of the fire, but you haven't, have you?
There's no escaping us. Clare women everywhere.
They've cornered out.
Speaking of Clare, we heard Brian Logan there in the intro. There is a huge amount of drama, a lot of fallout from the positive COVID tests within the hurling camp. So we know that yesterday's Allianz Hurling League game between Wexford and Kilkenny was cancelled because of three positive COVID tests within the group. Two Clare players were deemed close contacts and missed their county's win against Laois yesterday. Then Clare hurling manager Brian Logan told RTÉ Sport, as we heard, that he is very angry and frustrated by the development. Wexford chairman Micheál Martin then responded to claims by Brian Logan. He said that the whole thing of being deemed close contacts was very unusual. He was speaking to Alan Corcoran on the South East radio station this morning, and he said that he would like to reiterate that no Wexford player had anything to do with the listing of Clare players as close contacts. So it is very dramatic, very complex. And it is another COVID story. To talk us through what the consequences and further fallout of this could be is RTÉ GAA reporter Damien Lawler. Damien, I think I summed it up there, but have I missed any elements of the story?
No, I just want to know, can I go on The Breakfast Show with Donica? much easier than this sort of stuff.
No, you're not wrong, Damien.
Well, look, best of luck, Donica.
Cheers, thank you.
I suppose, Marie, no, you haven't. Like, I mean, it's it's not going away anyway. That's the first thing. So it's going to have to be resolved at some stage. What that is, I don't know. I think, you know, there's been contact made with Crow Park and all of this, and there's been contact made. I've just contacted the HSE myself, just trying to get some sort of verification. So, like, that will be welcome if and when it does arrive back. Right now, you've got two Clare players deemed as close contacts. Clare are not happy with the manner in how those players were named. Wexford are absolutely adamant it had nothing to do with them. It was a HSE decision. And that's where the kind of the row has escalated. And I think both parties are staunchly backing themselves. So I think essentially, you know, Crow Park are going to have to get involved, and maybe the HSE are going to come out. I think if you're boiling it down, maybe it comes down to a technicality. Is there a different interpretation of close contact between the HSE in the Midwest and the HSE in the Southeast? So there is precedence for this. I remember interviewing Michael Deignan last winter before the Offaly County football final. In the county senior B final, Duro, one of their players was deemed a close contact, whereas up to now, and mostly around the country, GAA players or outdoor sports events have been deemed casual contact. In that instance, the Duro manager, Shane Curran, actually pulled out of the final with Owen Mooney, his coach at the time, didn't feel the procedure has been followed right. But the player involved subsequently took a COVID test and proved negative. He restricted for 14 days, and the team went ahead, played the Senior B final, won it, and got promoted. So again, that was another anomaly, and there was a technicality over that as well. So mostly to date in the GAA and in sporting environments, we've been dealing with casual contacts. This time around, the players in Clare have been deemed a close contact. And looking back at my notes from the GAA COVID advisory group, a close contact is someone who's been had contact with an infected person within 2 metres for greater than 15 minutes, or stayed in the same close environment as an infected person for any amount of time. Now, most of those places are indoors. A casual contact is somebody, an individual who has shared a close space with a case for less than 2 hours. So it's very, very technical, Marie. It's very emotional as well. As I say, both parties feel they're 100% right on the issue, and there's no budge on either at the moment.
Damien, is there any chance that the dark arts have been taken to an all-time low?
I wouldn't, like, I suppose I don't have the 100% facts from all sides ascertained, Ruby, but to me, even if there were dark arts at play, which I'm not sure there were, or I don't think there were in this instance or anything like that, it's up to the HSE to decide who is deemed as close contacts. So even if anybody wanted to try something out, it's up to the HSE to deem who are close contacts. And for some reason, two Clare players have been deemed close contacts, and we're looking for further clarification on why that is the case. And I know the GAA are working with the HSE on this issue. I'd imagine they're trying to get clarity as well. Wexford are fully adamant they had nothing got to do with it. They've stated publicly on a number of occasions. And Clare are bemused as to why two of their players have been named as close contacts when they feel they've been everything in their power to prevent such a case happening, and that in their experience, everything up to now has been deemed on a casual contact basis.
And these players are isolating as well, Damien, aren't they?
Yeah, you'd imagine so. I mean, you'd have to isolate for 14 days from when you get word. So I think this kind of came last week, Marie. So their lives have probably been put on hold as well. It'd be very, very upsetting for them as well. And I was asking people, like, could the COVID-19 tracker app be responsible for... Could the Bluetooth be responsible for linking up close contacts? But, you know, I don't think that's the case at all. I just feel that...
HSE's computer system's up to date. There's no way. That's sick. How could that have happened?
Yeah, well, look, as far as I know, Wexford have been in close contact with the HSE, and they've been absolutely working on this for the past week, and it's been completely verified to their satisfaction that they had nothing got to do with the naming of close contacts. Again, down in Clare, they're not happy. Well, Brian Lowen's not happy with that. And I know the county board's released a statement this morning. But again, Brian is standing by his statements, and he was clearly agitated by it yesterday. Didn't really see this one coming, to be honest with you. We haven't had huge examples of it so far, and I thought I'd seen nearly everything in terms of the 14 months or so that we've been dealing with this, Marie. And we've been dealing with this on your show since the moment it started, you know. So this is a strange one. Now, it's could it leave further grey areas open for teams? So we have to see what the HSE response is, what the answer and the criteria in this case were.
Yeah, it is quite complex, Damien. And as you said, it's going to take a while to sort out, and there'll probably be a lot more finger pointing over the next while. Damien Lawler, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Now we are going to turn our attention to football. Earlier today, Shamrock Rovers midfielder Danny Mandrow was named in a 27-man Republic of Ireland squad for the friendlies against Andorra and Hungary. Tony O'Donoghue was out talking to Stephen Kenny, and he spoke to him about what to expect over the coming games.
Well, we really have five games. Like, that's the way I look at it. We have these two games against Andorra and Hungary, which are two friendly games. But these are at the end of the season, at the very start of the next season. In other words, the 1st of September, we have Portugal in Portugal, and we have Azerbaijan in hopefully with a crowd in the Aviva Stadium. And then we have 3 days later, followed by Serbia in the Aviva Stadium. So I did 9 points to play for in September. And really, there are five games in succession, two in isolation, then three.
Did you have a chat with the likes of your captain, Seamus, though, and say, you know, do you want to take some time off, or did he want to be there?
Yeah, I have a duty to Seamus, you know, like, because he's had some hamstring problems this year. He tweaked his hamstring in playing against Wolves last week, and he had to come off, and that was... So we have to manage him, but he's such a determined character, and he loves playing for Ireland. It means absolutely everything to him. And, you know, we need that to manifest itself right throughout the squad, because that's what a successful Irish team must be based on, you know. So Shane's very important overall.
Let me talk about some of the new players. Jamie McGrath has had a terrific season, 17 goals in Scotland, and he's one that you were very aware of from an early age.
Yeah, you know, certainly Jamie is technically extremely skillful and great feet, and really good technical player, has adapted, obviously had him at Dundalk, and he's gone on to go and play in St Mirren and do very well.
Danny Mandrow of Shamrock Rovers, I know you watched him on Friday against Dundalk. He's shown many times his potential. Is he ready for the step up, do you think?
Listen, we had Danny in the under 21 team, you know, initially when he came back from Brighton. It was a difficult period for him. He's gone back and worked really hard, first at Bohemians and now at Shamrock Rovers, and technically he's as good as anyone, if not better. He's a brilliant range of pass and he's terrific. He ability to score goals from outside the box, and you know, so I think he's maturing as a man. You can see he's sort of maturing as an individual, and I think that maturity, you can see it in his play, you know. And I think that he's really, really got amazing skill levels, really amazing skill levels, and we hope that he can do well and make the step up.
Now, we seem to be blessed in a way that we have a lot of very talented centre-halves, but one that's been added is Andrew Omabamadele. He's done well to break into the Norwich team, and indeed he's on the way to the Premier League.
Yeah, well, it was sort of effortless for him. He came into an Irish team that was riding the crest of a wave, which is a good time to come in. They're winning games, and he was just so composed, very athletic. He's been in our underage teams. We've seen him in our under 17 teams only a couple of years ago in the European Championships in Dublin. And we've seen him play with Norwich in those last seven games of the Championship. Their first choice centre backs were back after an injury, but the manager didn't put them back in. He kept faith with Andrew, because he was playing that well. He couldn't take him out of the team. It's happened earlier than we would have envisaged, due to obviously a couple of players missing. We wouldn't have envisaged he would have got through that early. We're all surprised that's happened so quickly. He's only 18, but he has all the attributes to be a really good defender.
Now, we mentioned it's apart from a couple of exceptions, it's a very young squad, a lot of learning to do. And do you think that these couple of games will help their development?
Yeah, listen, we brought 15 players into the squad before this squad in the last 6 months, and we've capped 13 players. We've made 13 players have made a competitive international debut in that period. Now, that's without the new call-up. So this is an influx of players into the squad that Ireland will benefit over the next couple of years. We're talking about having one or two players through in the previous 8 or 9 years, and all of a sudden now some people might feel that's too much too soon, but there is a bigger picture. And we need that talent to come through. Not all of them are going to be top-class international players, but we'll have a number who will do well. And we need that influx into the international team over a period of time. And, you know, there's no doubt that we will reap the benefits of that.
And finally, do you think, how important is it to get a win? Because there is that statistic that we haven't had one yet against Andorra or indeed against Hungary.
Yeah, listen, we're all in... annoyed and frustrated at that, and we have to sort of put that to bed and start winning matches.
Tony O'Donoghue there speaking to Ireland manager Stephen Kenny, and Tony joins us now on the line. Tony, some new faces in Stephen Kenny's squad. What's your reaction to it?
Well, it's exciting to see the new faces coming in, but the stark reality is, as he said there at the end, you know, we just have to start winning matches. And Andorra are 158th ranked team in the world. If we don't win that one, you know, the tide has turned in some respects already against Stephen Kenny. And yet I fully believe that, you know, what he's doing has to be done. He has been the victim, if you like, of dreadful circumstance and bad luck, but he knows, like anybody else in professional football, that it's about winning games. This is only a friendly, and you can see by the look of the squad, it's a hugely inexperienced squad, and to me a very exciting squad. I mean, I'm delighted to see the likes of Jamie McGrath, who scored 17 goals for St Mirren this season, in the squad. Danny Mandrow, as he said, Mandrow is technically one of the best players we have. He's able to do outstanding things. Whether he can do it on the professional basis at Shamrock Rovers at the moment, or wherever else his career might take him, is he up to international level? Well, we'll only see by putting him in there. Chidoze Ogbene, we've seen he's someone with great pace. He played with Cork City and Limerick before going across Channel. He's played in the Championship a lot recently, and I know he's someone that Stephen Kenny really likes. And then you look at all the other ones that we're, you know, have fingers and toes crossed for, you know, Adam Eda, Connolly, Parrott. You know, this is the future, and we have to accept that the future is going to be some time away. We can't continue to have bad results, but this is the way he's got to go. He was missing a lot of players anyway. When you look about, you know, Robbie Brady's been injured, Kieran Clark, Jeff Hendrick, Enda Stevens, Alan Brown, Callum O'Dowda, Kevin Long. Now, I don't want to add those to the list of, you know, the bad luck column of Stephen Kenny, because there's a new way of looking at it. And he has a nice mix of experience as well. Darren Randolph is back among the goalkeepers. Will it be Kelleher or Bazunu for the future? Well, it might be Randolph to get his first game back for a while. Seamus Coleman is travelling, which is a brilliant sign of him. I mean, what a captain he is, and he's totally signed up to the whole Stephen Kenny era. Shane Duffy is travelling. He's had a difficult time, as you know, personally, and then the Glasgow Celtic move didn't work out, but there's a very good player in there, and you know, he'll be looking for a move, and you know, he's committed to the Ireland squad as well, as of course as the likes of James McLean, Harry Arter there as well. So it'd be interesting. This is the first time that there hasn't been three games in a narrow window. You know, they left some time together on the training pitch. How many of these players will make the starting 11 for the game against Portugal in September? That remains to be seen, but you know, we have to start somewhere. There's been a huge gap in Irish football, where for many years no new players were capped. Now, as he said himself, he's capped 13 already. You know, four more new faces in the squad in this particular squad announcement, and we can only hope that it does lead to better things at the far end of the football world.
Tony, you also pointed to Ireland's void of players in their early to mid 20s and kind of blamed the regime ahead of them for having a reluctance or a failure to bring in new blood. Is that a fair comment? Who in particular didn't the previous regimes bring in? Is there a list of players there that none of us know about?
There's a dearth of players. That's the problem, and I think that's gone to a lot of the coaching situation. I mean, you know, we have relied on the English system in the main to try and produce our top players. They haven't been produced really at home, and when the English Premier League exploded as it did, and suddenly it became the cream of the crop in a world level, it was harder for a lot of our players to get through, and the game here simply wasn't organised enough. The structures weren't there to develop players to a professional level. But also, you'd have to say, giving it back to the managers, you know, there was a win at all costs. When you look back, I mean, I had great regard for Trapattoni, but he didn't care about the League of Ireland, or he didn't care about the structures below him, and you know, there was an inverted triangle in a way. I mean, you know, we didn't really get the big picture, the joined up picture of what's happening at grassroots has to lead to the highest elite level, the international level. And so you could say that the same could be said of Martin O'Neill, of Mick McCarthy. They wanted to win matches and get to tournaments. But for us to do that on an ongoing basis, we have to water the grassroots, if you like, tend to the lower levels. And, you know, we have a crop of good players, of new players. Unfortunately, not all of them are not even many of them are playing regularly at Premier League level. So we've just got to reset, and I think this is all part of the reset button. And that's why, you know, he'll say it's important that he wins, and, you know, whatever. I think a win against Andorra is absolutely essential, because, as I said earlier, I think, you know, there's a tide of public opinion perhaps, you know, turning against Stephen Kenny, but this is absolutely essential for a renaissance, for a rebirth of Irish football. And if it has to be some players like Danny Mandrew in the League of Ireland, that's fine too. You know, we have to hope that the League of Ireland, the senior clubs, can develop their structures correctly. The likes of Shamrock Rovers appear to be doing it, that you can bring through and have academies that gives you the professional approach that you would get abroad, that brings through the players. Because the difference between amateur coaching and professional coaching is absolutely immense. And then the difference between the different levels is huge as well. So that's why this camp is important. But really, I suppose the proof of the pudding will then be in the games in September, the three games together in the qualifiers. I mean, many people have probably written off our hopes already. It would be nice to get a couple of results and see if we can make some effort in this campaign to do something.
Well, with that in mind, Tony, there are some League of Ireland games on right now. Derry City and St. Pat's, it's 2-1 to Derry City there. And Bowes are leading Dundalk 2-0. And there's three matches then kicking off at 7:45. Waterford, Finharp, Strada United and Longford Town and Shamrock Rovers and Sligo Rovers. Stephen Kelly also joins us on the line. Well, Stephen, there's definitely lots of templates for superstar academies and doing things right. And one of them is Manchester City. They are doing everything right at the moment, and they look like they are not going to be stopped anytime soon, just powering on to another Premier League title. The season is over now. It's theirs.
Oh, they've been absolutely exceptional. And to round it off the way they did in such style, the performance level, it was like men be boys, that game against Everton. It was absolutely amazing to watch. The performance was so high, their passing, their quality, every goal was wonderful. And they're just a joy. They really are. And everything is firing at the moment, and you know they're such deserved winners of the league. And I think so many teams are so far off their level at the moment; it's unbelievable.
Stephen, to watch Man City yesterday and then watch Chelsea, does it look ominous for what's going to come in the week ahead in the European Cup final? I mean, City were just on a different planet to what Chelsea were trying to do yesterday.
It does. It does look ominous, and you kind of feel that, you know, I know City beat City twice in recent games, and they knocked them out of the FA Cup and they beat them in the league, and you almost think how did that happen? But you know, there was a big change in the team, and it was almost like it's haunting from City. They completely changed the starting lineup in one of the games, but the weekend Chelsea got watching that fixture, I think, and this side, if we don't do something drastic against these and stop them, they have no hope. And what Chelsea have built on, and what they've got them into the stage where they're back in the Champions League, they're finishing the Champions League places, and they're in the final now. It was based on around the real solid defensive, the lack of scoring goals is an issue. They don't put the ball away in the top end of the pitch. They create chances, but they don't put it away. But defensively, they've been really solid. But that's kind of started to falter the last few weeks, and you can't have any defensive frailties against City.
When you look at City, I think it's amazing the job that Pep Guardiola does. When you look at the players, the amount of players he has, how he keeps them all gelled together and playing for him, he just has some aura. Players want to play for him.
Oh, you would absolutely run through a brick wall to play for that man. Seriously, you would die to have an opportunity to play under his coaching, the level of intensity he shows on the side of the pitch, how often he's talking to the players. He literally walks through every step of the game. He doesn't stop, and then he's never satisfied. You see, after a game, he's still critiquing, he's still talking to them, and the best players want the manager like that, that's always striving for more, striving for better, and that's the reason why they continue on to get better. Don't get me wrong, they've got a huge kitty, and if they weren't financially so secure and so wealthy, they wouldn't be in the position they're in, but they are. But they still play a style and a brand of football that's so enjoyable. And the players that he has and the form they're in, it's remarkable.
Stephen, whatever about the coaching, it's the caring as well. Just hearing him chatting about Aguero was incredible. You could see why there was such a tight bond. But 2 weeks ago, he wasn't too impressed with his penalty. But then he's lording him yesterday.
I know, it's a funny one because you kind of always, well, I always felt that he was, there was never that much love for Aguero. Just with the way when he came in, he was keen to kind of drop him initially. He brought in Jesus, and that was it. There was a big push for him to start. The Aguero fought back in, and he just didn't seem like he was the type of striker that was fit into the criteria that, that Pep wanted. But he did, and, you know, you don't know what behind the scenes. The Pep is always quite guarded in the sense of off-the-field activities, and he talks, you know, he seems to get very upset and talking about how he'd be settling in on a human level, how he helps them. And, you know, you wouldn't have known that if it wasn't for the interview. So, yeah, it was really interesting.
Stephen Kelly, thanks so much for joining us. Tony, we were going to talk about Liverpool and Harry Kane, but we have no time, unfortunately. We'll have to get back to those two topics another time.
Can I just wish Dunner as well in his new gig?
Cheers, Tony.
Yeah, he used to be a close contact of mine. It'll be a casual contact from now on, I'm sure.
I'll ring you on the way up.
I'm not sure I'll be up that early, Dunners, but best of luck to you. I'm going to miss you.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. We're going to take a quick break.
New cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is time to turn our attention to Gaelic football, and Jason Sherlock has very kindly took some time out of his busy day just before he goes playing golf to have a chat to us. Jason, what golf course are you sitting outside?
I am in the car park at Castlemilk Golf
Club. Brilliant.
Well, we won't keep you too long anyway. We'll let you get off to your round. But there is plenty to talk about, I have to say, because it's been a really entertaining time for football. So many goals. Dublin and Kerry yesterday, throwing up 5, could have been 6. But from looking at it, Jason, do you think that maybe it's given us more questions than answers?
Yeah, I think obviously it's great, and it certainly whetted the appetite, certainly for me, after playing in my monthly medal yesterday morning and having to put up with the elements. It was the perfect fillip for me to be able to watch the GA and then watch the goals then later on, particularly Shane and Porrick and seeing Lefty doing it. But yeah, it seems like the signs are positive in the sense of the games. They seem to be very high scoring, and obviously from a supporter's perspective, that's great, and hopefully it's a sign to come for the summer ahead.
Jason, do you think it was a sign of Dublin's intent or Kerry's defending that Dublin went for so many goals, yet Kerry were happy enough to kick points from the 20-30 yard line?
I don't think it's by design, really. I think games like all sports, they kind of take a life of their own, and you kind of take the opportunities that arise. And I think if you look at that first quarter, it was very edgy for both teams. Maybe it was the occasion, maybe it's the fact that they haven't had as much practice as they'd like, but certainly there was an edginess to it. And then kind of Kerry seemed to be in a good place after that kind of first quarter. And then Dublin got 2 goals. Now, when you look at the origin of those 2 goals, they actually came from short kickouts from Dublin. So it wasn't a case that Kerry were exposed at the back. There were just opportunities that came. But and then when you look at Kerry's total, they just have that talent. They have that quality that they can get scores from anywhere. And that's what makes them so dangerous and so potent. So, again, I think from both sides, from the defensive situation, you probably will look back and say, well, what can we do differently if we do play that opposition again? But at the same time, in the modern game, it's very hard to kind of counteract against attacking teams when they have their flow like both teams did yesterday.
So, Jason, as a former forward, when you're looking at that Kerry defence, what are you thinking?
I think the challenge with Kerry, obviously they were criticised last year after the game against Cork because they were perceived to be ultra-defensive. So, you know, they're trying to change tactically. And the game now, it's so quick, it's so chaotic. It's very hard to kind of have a set tactic for 70 minutes, because if you want to bring additional players back, that's going to have a knock-on effect on how good you are offensively. And we all know how great Kerry are offensively. And in some ways, the best way the best way to defend is keep the ball. If you have the ball, the opposition can't score. So, it is a challenge, and particularly on the Dublin forward line with Conor Coughlan, Kieran Kilkenny, etc. But certainly, I've no doubt that the Kerry coaches will look back and see were there things that they could have done differently to ensure that Dublin don't get in for four goals if and when they play them again.
Look, Jason, last weekend we had the new rules introduced to GAA football. Yesterday we had two penalties between Kerry and Dublin, rightly so. But I thought more so watching Monaghan and Donegal, Conor McCarthy scored three goals, but on two of them, the Donegal defenders didn't take him down when in the past they may have.
Yeah, you could look at it like that. And I think in the spirit of all rules, it's to assist our game and to improve our games. And I don't know the mindset of the Donegal defenders, but certainly if that's a knock-on effect because of the rules, that's absolutely fair. I suppose my observations, and I tweeted about this during the Dublin Kerry game, was the offensive mark. I'm just not sure what it adds to our game as a spectacle. I think someone being able to hit the ball 15 yards and catch it, and they can put their hand in the air and get a free kick, I don't think it does much as a spectacle. But also, probably more concerning, is what are we coaching, or what will we be coaching our young boys and girls of the future, that if you get possession like that, to stop and just put your hand in the air. And a perfect example of that would be Conn's goal chance in the first half, where he caught a ball over two Kerry defenders. Now, a coach could stop that and say, well, listen, Conn, you still have a defender and a goalie to beat. You're better off putting your hand in the air and taking your quick free. I don't think that's the way the game should be played. So I was delighted to see that Conn had the instincts to go. And as a coach, I would be happy to suffer the consequences. I think the other challenging one is the advantage rule. I think Kerry legitimately had a goal in the first half with the old rule where the referee should give him 3 seconds, 5 seconds to play an advantage. So again, I suppose rules are always going to be contentious, but I would always try to ensure that they are for the betterment of the game and that you don't create a headache that you probably haven't even thought about.
That was the only downside to that game. Darren Moynihan was true and scored a goal, and it was taken back for a free kick. It wasn't even a penalty. It didn't seem anyway fair.
Yeah, well, again, I've been out of the loop for the last kind of 2 years, so the old advantage rule, and again, as a coach, you have to look how you can maximise the rule. And certainly with the old advantage rule, if your forward got fouled, you would instill in him, well, go for it for the next 3 seconds. And if you can get a shot on goal, great, because you know you have your free. And that was the instance where the old advantage rule would have assisted Darren Moynihan. For whatever reason, with the new one, it didn't help him. So, again, the spirit of all these rules are to improve our game. So, hopefully, the rule makers are humble enough to realise that, well, maybe some of these rules aren't as conducive as we'd like.
Well, they're probably getting a little small bit of a freer pass because there are so many goals and there has been so much entertainment, but there is still a lot of upwear about them. And just before we let you go, Jason, if you had to pick to play in a forward line with, would you go with Conor Callaghan or David Clifford?
Yeah, I'm not going with both of them.
Brilliant. Jason, thanks a million.
Thanks, guys.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. There are two early kickoffs in the League of Ireland. Derry City and St. Pat's are 1-1 at half-time, and Damien O'Mara is standing by at Bowes Dundalk. Damien.
Hi, Marie. Yeah, good evening to you. Half-time here where Bohemians lead by 2-0. A really enjoyable contest over the course of the first 45 minutes. Both goals coming inside the first 10 minutes of the game. Georgie Kelly scoring with what had been Bowes' first attack of the game. They had absorbed an awful lot of early pressure from Dundalk, but Liam Burt released on the left wing. He fed Ross Tierney just outside the box. Tierney very unselfishly playing in. Kelly, who completely wrong-footed the Dundalk goalkeeper Alessio Abebe and effectively just rolled the ball into the net. The second goal came on the 10th minute. Ross Tierney fouled in a central position just outside the box by Chris Shields. Tyreek Wilson, who's captaining Bohemians tonight in the absence of Keith Buckley, stepped up and hit as good a free kick as you will see in any league anywhere this season. Rattled it right into the top corner. If you'd placed it by hand, you wouldn't have put it into a better position. Dundalk have had plenty of spells of dominance. David McMillan has gone close on three occasions. Dundalk also unhappy not to be awarded a penalty in the 20th 89th minute. Michael Duffy went down in the penalty area, but the referee Ben Connolly waved play on. Ross Tierney going very close then to making it 3-0 to Bowes with a header in the 31st minute, which was just tipped over the crossbar by Abibi. The sides finished second and third in the table last year. Now with a third of this season played, they find themselves just inside the bottom half of the table, sixth and seventh at the start of play. Bowes, of course, beaten by St. Pat's at the weekend. Look on course to bounce back. They've won only one and drawn one game of the five played here at Dalymount so far this season, so certainly not the fortress it has been in previous campaigns. But with the players about to re-emerge for the second half, Bowes look on course as it stands for victory. They lead Dundalk by 2-0.
Is that the completely unbiased view of Damien O'Mara?
Sorry,
no. Yeah?
Hang on now. There's 2 goals scored. I've reported on them, Ruby. I've reported
You're
on
never
three.
Never again going to see a free kick like it. It's the best one we've seen all year.
Have you watched it? Have you watched it?
I'm working,
Damien. Telling you now. Well, just so am I, but I am telling you. Watch it and you will be hard fixed to find a free kick as good as
Ruby. But the question is, has he the ball scarf on?
Not at all. No.
Davey, before we finish up with you, we're all saying goodbye to Donners. He's leaving us on Wednesday. I know you had many memorable moments on air.
You should see the text messages we've exchanged. They'd make a bishop blush. I just hope you're not.
The sounds it is, he's bringing everyone with him.
I just hope you're not picking the music, because if you are, it'll be muck.
That's a fact.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, we
that's
know. You try that in this show. Go on.
Yeah. You know, it'll be all Taylor Swift and Descendants and other stuff
Frozen
like that.
He sang on air a couple of times here.
Yeah. Well, I heard it's his ringtone.
I wouldn't be surprised. Damien O'Mara, thank you so much. Donners, we're saving you here. You know that.
You're not wrong. I can't even come back.
Now, our next guest will probably have a go as well. Niall Moran is with us to talk about all of the hurling action over the weekend. And it was pretty dramatic. Niall, how are you?
I'm great form altogether. Look, Donners, I'm glad you're talking about something you know in music, because to be honest, you know nothing about hurling either.
Absolutely. I know a lot about breakfast. It's my favourite subject.
At least he doesn't pretend to. Like me.
Well, if I was getting paid for it, I would.
Somebody actually texted in and said that, Donnacha, you know more about breakfast than you do about sports. And I think they mean food.
So 100% agreed with it. Absolutely love it. Can't wait. Niall, it was a brilliant weekend.
Yeah, super weekend here, Donners. We had thunder, lightning, hailstones. We were glad of the sport now. But a great weekend sport now. Maybe not the greatest for Limerick, but really, really good now. Far better game of hurling, and even that is better games of hurling. And let's talk about the rules. So, brilliant, yeah.
So we had Damien O'Mara overstating how good Bowes are going, and you're understating how ordinary a weekend it was for Limerick. It's going great here this evening.
Yeah, it was a tough end to a bad week there now for us. But look, to be honest, I wouldn't be as downtrodden as what we would have been in other games. So the team of this show for the last couple of weeks, we keep been talking about Limerick. So I think more to do yesterday was Waterford. Really, they stepped up a notch from last year, and they needed to be really, because the game alone, Park Cree was very, very disappointing, where they were porous at the back. And I think that was the thing that probably would have concerned Liam Cahill, like, coughed up 5 goals and kind of died without a whimper. And I think the fear maybe in Waterford was that it may have been a repeat of kind of the hangover that they had in 17. But no, they were super. And really, I think, like, tactical wise, they definitely matched Limerick. They seem to have learned a lot. Physically, they have gone up another notch. And look, I know it was huge for them to win that game. And they kind of went for it. To be honest, the one criticism I would have had of them in the Ireland final was I felt that they didn't throw caution to win. To the wins, that they paid Limerick too much respect and never really went for it. If you could say that about a team in Ireland, but that was my feeling. Whereas yesterday, they took chances. Like, the goal that they got was, that was an incredible goal. It won't feature in any stats at the end of the year, but between the turnover, the ball from Stephen Bennett, the fetch from Fagan, and the finish, like, really, that was incredible. And even Stephen Bennett there was a chance of an easy point maybe a few minutes earlier. It went for a goal, but like, if you're going to get to the top, you're going to have to take those chances. So Liam Cahill will be pleased. And look, to be honest, John Kiley won't be downtrodden either. Like, the free count was dramatically down. And do you know what I mean? Because some guys really showed up very well. Conor Boylan, is one of his first outings, was excellent. So, well, positive day for both teams, to be honest.
Yeah, Henry Shefflin was saying the same about the goal as you were saying, Niall. But Limerick were down to 14 men for a good part of the game. Seamus Flanagan got sent off. So did that make it easier for Water to go for it when you're playing against 14?
Look, obviously, the way the game's gone physicality-wise and teams are so smart, obviously it's going to be
it was going to be a factor. But to be honest, they had played very, very well up to that point anyway against the wind, and they'd probably been disappointed with some of the chances that they left behind. Look, it probably deprives Limerick of an attacking outlet inside, but probably given the way that Limerick play, so it's not as dramatic a loss as what it might be for other teams, because Limerick tend to do a lot of their hurling from outside. So, look, it wasn't really a factor. Look, they went toe-to-toe at Limerick. They got under Limerick's skin. I suppose that's where maybe a couple of pieces of the discipline came in. And maybe for Limerick, they're a little bit off, just a small bit off, a percentage off. And when you're percentage off, you know, as a player, like, lads get under your skin. If you're not fully, fully on your game, you will, you know, you'll react. I think that's what happened to Limerick on that occasion. But, look, they know there's a bit of work to be done. And they've loads of time to do it. You'd still think, like, there's still 6 weeks out in Championship.
Niall, it wasn't a dramatic loss, but at the same time, they haven't won yet, which is very unlike Limerick. Is there concerns down there? Because we're not used to seeing this Limerick team not winning games.
Actually, I'm kind of laughing at it, Marie. The times that we played, normally we'd be getting ready to have our second manager of the year at this stage.
We wouldn't even be in the conversation as well.
Oh, well, we'd be in the conversation, right? Because there'd be nothing else funny. What's going on down Limerick? They're drinking or they're fighting or doing something. I think, to be honest, there was a time when we were like the Columbia, and now we kind of become a little bit German-like in that we're process-driven. So, look, you're a tiny bit off it, but, like, there's nothing between the teams, like, and they're going to catch up. And, like, physically, in terms of two games, the last two games, like, you've had teams that have been able to match them and know that they're every bit as good as them on a given day. And that's the margins that are there. I think what you really find is that maybe the likes of Cork are coming underneath a little bit quieter run. Like Wexford, they could have done the game yesterday, really see where they're at, because, do you know what I mean? Let's not forget, 2 years ago, they were a hair's breadth away from being in the All-Ireland final. So the margins are very, very tight. And look, the timescale is starting to run tight as well. That's probably where the little bit of concern might start to creep in, that there are particular guys that maybe haven't found their form. So look, again, everything, it's only one game. They weren't hammered out the gate, far from it. Small margins, they might have won the game. So look, there's not going to be a sensationalist about it.
I know Cork were playing Westmeath yesterday, so it's hardly a top end game, but there's nothing too quiet about 7:27 sneaking in under the radar from Cork now.
No. And Cork have a habit of doing that. Again, like we said about Galway a couple of weeks previous, it's a statement of intent. When teams are on their game, they'll beat the so-called lesser teams, they'll obliterate them, and I think you've seen that again with Cork, that they'll obliterate them. It's funny, the next game is Limerick and Cork in the Gaelic Grounds, a kind of pre-run the Munster Championship, and it's really, neither team are probably going to probably win the league at this stage. Well, I suppose Cork is still in with a shot of it, but do you know what I mean? It'd be interesting to see how both teams would line out, because I think Cork are coming with something, but John O'Grady is shrewd in his involvement there. You might see them holding back a little bit, perhaps, but they're definitely a force to be reckoned with. For Westmeath, I suppose it is concerning. Let's not forget, Westmeath have taken a bad couple of beatings. Leash have probably been a little bit off it, which is disappointing given the return of Cheddar and the great setup that he has around them. So that is a little bit of a concern for both those teams, that the gap is starting to widen, and maybe that's kind of a reflection of the resources at their disposal. Do you know what I mean? They may not have the same resources to pump into preparation as other counties. So look, Cork are building, but for Westmeath to cough up that kind of a score at this level twice out is a major worry.
Just imagine what Clare would have done if Brian Lawan had those two players. They only managed to score 227 without them.
And again, I think, look, it's great for Clare too, because so the first day out they were just poor. Antrim beat them, and more so because they were poor. And the last day, they were very, very unlucky not to win against Wexford. There was a quick turnaround there after the sending off. So he's starting to build momentum, but it's just, look, it is probably awful for him in the sense that he is down the likes of Peter Dugg and a couple of strong players that he could do it really to bolster their attack. But there's an honesty about them. Where they're at, ultimately I think Dublin and Clare are playing the next game in the league. They're two games of they're two teams that are at probably a similar pitch at the moment who really need to find out where they're at. So that's going to be an intriguing game in round four.
I think Clare just need to be able to put all of the off-field issues behind them now and start focusing on the hurling, especially when you mentioned momentum there, and Tipperary seem to be building it. And I know you said Championship is far enough away, but it's actually not that far really when you think about it, and Tip look like they're coming good at the right time.
I suppose, Marie, when I talk, I kind of somebody who'd stand by what I said, and I said it after the Limerick game, I didn't see anything different in Tip
to suggest that they'd be a team that would win the All-Ireland. And I'm not going to lie to you, I still don't. What I will say is their ingenuity, the way they play hurling, like the two McGraths, Noel McGraths, offloads Jason Ford, John McGrath, Bubbles, Jason Ford. If they just had the same little pep and the speed in their legs that they do in their brains, by God, it would take a serious team to beat them. But I just, like, even there, they just operated the last day off their wits. And even there was a period in the third quarter where Galway had really overran them. And Galway just probably shot erratically at times. They played really, really well, Galway, but they shot erratically and they never really reeled Tip back in. Whereas Tip, just their option taking, their score taking, they scored in the right zones. They're like, I know Eamon O'Shea is one of their head coaches there, he's a professor of economics. But by God, his boys were economical in how they did things. But I just don't think it'll be enough to win them that All-Ireland. But that's not to say that they won't pick two or three teams along the way. Of course they are. They're Tipperary, have never gone. But I suppose one thing, again, Marie, just to reiterate, I just think for young lads to watch the two McGraths in particular, they're just majestic in what they do with their hands. And even for anybody who was privy to the county final last year, Loughmore and Kildangan, like Loughmore were hanging in there on the back of just some of their touches, their skills, their vision. And like, really, when you go home from the game, it's one thing to be Noel McGrath or John McGrath is what you'd like to be. But ultimately for Tip, will it be enough for the years there? I just can't see into that. I don't think they have it in the legs.
Do you think that Galway have it? I know it's quite hard to see what they're trying to do because there are a lot of changes going on, and it does seem like Shane O'Neill is trying to figure out what way he wants his team to play and using the league to do that. How would you assess how they've been so far?
I would actually, as a coach and a manager, if I was a Galway coach and manager, I would have actually been a lot more pleased leaving Thurles yesterday than what I'd have even been the previous week. And I know that sounds, sure, how could you be? They were beaten and maybe convincingly so. Galway just did an awful lot of things right in terms of how they set up, in terms of how they closed space. It was just some of the errors that they did make was in their execution, okay? And in terms of just at critical times when they shot. And that is, like, as a coach, you see the importance of, like, really keeping a cool head at critical times. Because there is a couple of new guys, Brian Kincannon, you know what I mean? A few guys like that wouldn't necessarily been there for the All-Ireland a few years ago. And one other thing that was critical in all the games was discipline. Like, Jarlath Manning got sent off at a critical time. Again, look, in the greater scheme of Ireland things, nothing major, but enough to warrant the sending off. No difference to Shane Flanagan and sort of other sending offs. And I just think the lessons that they'll have learned, you have a stick to beat them with now for the next couple of weeks. They've gotten out of the league probably what they need to get out of it. Ultimately, they may still end up with silverware, but I think they have the lessons. They're starting to accumulate those lessons. You would hope, because against Kilkenny in the Leinster final, they did do something similar in terms of erratic shooting when they were on top. So I just think the management, they have a stick to beat them with, and I do think the lessons that they might have got on Saturday would be invaluable as the season wears on.
Yeah, and there still is a bit of hurling to be done yet. Niall Moran, thanks so much for joining us. We're going to cross back over to Damien O'Mara at Daily Mount. Damien.
Well, we've had a third goal. We're into the 8th minute of the second half. It's now Bohemians leading by 3-0. Dundalk awarded a throw-in near enough to the corner flag on the far touchline. Bowes turning over possession, breaking very quickly through Liam Burt on the left wing. He cut back inside. Eventually, the ball played across the box to Georgie Kelly, who had all the time in the world to compose himself and fire past Alessio Abibi for Kelly's second goal of the evening. And then shortly before you joined us, Bowes reduced to 10 men. Tyreek Wilson, who's captaining Bohemians tonight in the absence of Keith Buckley, a second yellow card for him for a foul on the edge of the box. So it's Bowes down to 10 men, leading by 3-0.
Thanks, Damien. Now, we are nearly finished for this evening, but Donegal, we need to have a very quick chat about Rog and La Rochelle. It wasn't meant to be, or wasn't to be, for him over the weekend.
No, to be fair, they didn't get much luck in it. I think when you get a red card like that within the game, you know, Bottia going off, and you could see the game plan they were trying to play, Marie. It was very kind of direct, and he is a brilliant player at that, and you could see they probably had a lot of play off that to get going. So yeah, I thought he was brilliant though in his interview afterwards, Ruby. I don't know if you heard him.
Just seeing
Bottia with him going up to the stand and chatting to him, it shows the relationship they probably have. So look, it was disappointing for them. Look, many teams would use the excuse, and I think they'll look at certain areas of it. If they'd kick their points, they're in that game. But to go down to 14 men for such a stint in a game and to, you know, come up short, I know they'll be disappointed, but there's plenty for him to get his teeth into next year.
Yeah, exactly. And Boty had to go, but it boils down to West, doesn't it? Missing the three kicks. And I think Ronan has as much experience in that as anybody, but the future is bright for him, I'd say, all the same.
Absolutely. And if you look at the winning teams, look at Leinster, Johnny Sexton, look at Toulon when they won it, Johnny Wilkinson, Munster, Ronan O'Gara. You need that 10. You need that every point they're stingy with. And, you know, La Rochelle will get there. There's no doubt.
Right. We're going to do golf tomorrow because we never got to do it today. With Gary Murphy in, and he's going to assess the whole weekend for us. We're also going to preview the Alex Ferguson documentary, Ruby's Pal. Alex there, Alan Colley will be in to do that. We're going to do a little bit of European football as well, so we've loads to get through. And Donica will still be with us, most importantly.
Keep
two
going.
More days.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, Tara Stewart's up next.
Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.